I suppose it would be, that's an appropriate introduction to my guest of this morning, one Malachy McCourt. And well, let's see if Malachy is up yet, even. Malachy?
Up? Let's see. What do you mean by up?
Hey, listen. Excuse me.
I mean, the language you use is atrocious, so often that can be mistaken for...
I know, yeah.
Up.
Excuse me.
But,
back in...
I'm very busy. Listen, I just had one cup of coffee, and what do you want? Listen, I'll pay it back, okay? You know, I know it's 250,000 at 97% interest, but I'll give it back to you, okay?
Okay. Well, anyway,
the check is in the mail, Adrian.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure many people now know, because I've reminded them often enough, that I began my radio programs back in 1970. And, you know, much to the chagrin of Brendan Ward, who gave me my start on radio.
Yes.
And Harry McGurk. And those, because for about 5 years before then, I was trying to ease my way into radio. And so I'd been doing like news and, you know, interviews. But then I got my own program, and, you know, misfortune, you know, descended upon me. And as my co-host trying to get off the ground, my co-host was Malachy McCourt. What a hell of a start that was. Well, I wanted actually to see if I could, you know, do a little bit better as a radio host than you had done, because you had been thrown off the air in a very, first of all, it was a large, biggest station at the time. What was it, WMCA?
MCA.
MCA.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it was, yeah, well, I know that your man there tried to patent, register, trademark your fired. I had it first.
Well,
because of two words, I give up radio, Adrian.
Okay, yeah.
And
well,
they are, you're fired.
Listen, that was it. Controversial radio. And was not associated by any means by with you know, by Irish broadcasters at the time. You had some great radio hosts, Dorothy Hayden Cudahy and her father before her. You had others, but you they wouldn't hire you.
They would not, no. You know, they...
They wouldn't let you on the air.
They wouldn't, no. I mean, I was irreverent, atheistic,
know.
And non-religious, and and critical, as Joyce said, you know, George Bernard Shaw said, you know, if you... you'll have no... If you put an Irishman on a spit to roast him, you'll find no difficulty finding another Irishman to baste him. So that's me. I'm a baster of the Irish, you see.
Well, and you've continued. Now, you've had many, many books, and for the benefit of those who don't know anything about Malachy McCourt, and I, that would probably be, you know, the very young, including... Are you babysitting while you're talking to me?
Oh, yeah. There's some grandchildren here.
Yeah, okay.
Three of them, and they come visiting often and staying overnight with Diana and myself, and it's great fun. We can't, much as we'd like, we don't take them off our tax stuff, you know, but that's, we're getting around to that.
Now, Malachy McCourt, stage, screen actor, author, raconteur, and And in our e-letter, I did warn, you know, the potential listeners that you are a Loose Cannon radio guest. So many of my regular listeners have already shut off the radio, and as many more would say that you are so outrageous that they shut off the radio.
Well, I know that quite a number of them, Adrian, have already made It Being Saturday. A goodly number of them are going to listen, but they have already made an appointment with their confessors because listening to me is an occasion of sin. And they're going
and
to do it anyway.
You would definitely know about sin, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And you know that, for a mortal sin, it has to have, as you know, the as a good Catholic yourself, because you don't practice because you're perfect, but it is a grievous matter, full consent of the will and full knowledge of the seriousness of the offense. So listening to me would be full consent, full knowledge, and it is grievous matter. Don't you like that? And aren't you astonished that I remember these conditions of a mortal sin? I'm constantly aware of them because being an atheist, I'm a very moral person. You know that.
Now, knock it off, because you have traded, on that, by your own definition, being an atheist. And I don't know, if you are typical of an atheist, then atheists are spiritual, if not religious. So knock it off, Maliki. I want to tell you right now.
Listen, I am the atheistic spiritual advisor to the cardinal. Anytime he wants to know about atheism, I'm the man he calls, because he has to get advice about what is perceived as the opponent, you see. Mm. And so he's moving in my direction, but don't worry about it. And the Pope, listen, the Pope is very close to us now. Yeah. Very close to us. Frankie. Yeah. He took the name Frankie because the name Maliki was taken.
Yeah. And there is no truth to the matter that he took Frankie because of your brother Frank. That was it.
Exactly. You picked up on that very quick there, Adrian.
your book, which actually is not released yet, but let's review it anyway. Death need not be fatal.
Yes. Mm. Well, I was going to call it, many times in the Emerald Isle, people of my age, which is 84, 85, I should say. I don't want to be lying about it. When you get to this stage of life, it's called the departure lounge. So I was going to call it Tales from the Departure Lounge, but the publisher vetoed that because it didn't actually say that so many conservatives are stupid, they don't get it, you see. And so we had to make it clearer than that. And so we named it Death Need Not Be Fatal, and I think they might... They might get that. I think they might. So there we are.
Yeah.
Hachette is the publisher, and that's coming out. It's actually not good. You're a bit premature here, Edbian. That's coming out in June. So we'll see what happens with that.
Now, you're constantly striving to outdo yourself, because I would say that not many people at 85, or myself much younger, would want to write a book which on the cover features you in a coffin. But I
Isn't that lovely? Isn't that a gorgeous picture?
You know, let me ask you, though, about that experience. Did you find it comfortable?
Well, Adrian, it's... The publisher acquiesced to my request and by the way, I have a co-writer on this one, Brian McDonald, and another one of our own. But when we rented, I was up near Rhinebeck, and I said to the publisher, I'd like the cover to be of me in a coffin. So they were a bit dubious about that. But anyway, they went ahead and rented a coffin. So Undertaker and his young son came over, and so that's how we did the day. We took the picture there some months ago. It was very, very nice sunny day. So it was the most wonderful day because the lining in the coffin, of course, is quite white and and I got into it. And they said they never had so much fun in their lives, the two of them. Of course, I was the first live one they ever had in one of their coffins. So the laughs were good for that day. And,
you're one of the first people actually to get out of the coffin.
That's right. And then, of course, I sang to them, look at the coffin with golden handles. Isn't it grand, boys, to be bloody well dead? Let's not have a sniffle. Let's have a bloody good cry. And always remember, the longer you live, the sooner you bloody well die. So I had that. I entertained them with that. And as you said, I arose from the coffin, and there it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, Jesus and myself had the same experience, resurrection. So you're talking to somebody very special now, so be respectful, okay? You don't know many people who get out of coffins.
Why, you do realize, of course, that the clock is running.
Yes.
And so why would you write about rushing this? And what are your expectations?
Well, I was thinking about, reading about immortality, right? Now, there are now loads of people, Adrian, loads and loads of people are wishing, there would be no organized religion if there weren't the fear of death. That's why people are afraid, you see. And I'm not. I don't give a fiddler's thought about it. It's not my concern because I'm not there. And as well as that, when you stop getting older, you're dead. And the thing about it is, people who can't occupy themselves on a wet Sunday afternoon are talking about immortality. They can't even occupy one day, not to mind to be living for play well ever. So the thing is this, it's done. And then the whole thing of that you're put there, wherever it is, and they're good people, the best of them, supposedly anyway, the very religious and righteous and so forth, are seated at the right hand of God. Mm-hmm. And there's nobody on the left except me. So when they look at God's, they're looking to when you're seated at the right hand of God and you're looking at him for eternity, that's what they say is your reward. So you're looking at God's earlobe, right? And then you happen to glance over to the left and there's nobody there but me. Now that is not heaven for a lot of people. That would be, Jesus, what's he doing here? Get him out of here. And there is a whole lot of thing about immortality. One of the things about which I read quite recently about St. Augustine, is that if you are elevated to sainthood, right? This is lovely. One of the privileges of being a saint, not being an ordinary kind of a good person in heaven. If you're a saint, you are allowed to look into hell and watch all those people like me getting punished, we're getting red-hot poker shoved up their armpits, and things like that. So that's one of the benefits of sainthood. So I was considering that as well, but I don't know if I want to be sitting there for all eternity looking at God's earlobe, right earlobe, as a matter of fact. I don't know, because hair grows in earlobes, and especially in old people.
Now,
there you are. So now, did I put you to sleep with that?
No, you didn't, but I want to tell you that I am aware that in no time flat you could drag me down with you, which is nothing new to you.
You?
And I...
Listen, if you hadn't paid me that large sum of money, I'd be revealing things about you, Mr. Flannelly, that would shock all your listeners who think you're so...
Yeah, I've actually been handed a note here by Anya Sheridan, who says...
You have somebody with...
Yeah, who actually has said here... Would you remind Maliki that he is that he's not allowed to say fart on radio?
So, oh, really?
Yeah. No, that's not...
It's a four-letter word. It's
not, and the only reason that I want to do that is that I want to make sure that people know I didn't say it, that you did.
That is
but anyway,
it, yes. It's actually not one of the words, Adrian. It's okay. You know what, although I mean, I might sound careless, but I'm aware of the words that you don't say on radio,
yeah.
And fart is not one of them. You're okay.
Well, I'm all right with that. Okay.
You are indeed. I assure you, if the FCC has any inquiries, tell them come to me, and I would reassure them, yeah.
Tell them come to you again.
Yeah, again, right. I used to have a thing which was go and FCC yourself, you know, and that was one of the... that was one of the things I had on the air when I was at WMCA some years ago.
Yeah, that's doing wonders for my program today. It would be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back in the days, though, of very stringent FCC, Federal Communications Commission, authority, and they had a very stringent department there.
It was ridiculous, Adrian. Ridiculous. Here you are. Now, you know what interests me about that? And in all seriousness, right? Now, there's a word that is quite common in Ireland, and everybody says it, and it begins with F, and we know what that one is, right? You can't say that.
That right? would be, the, by the way, that would be PH in Mayo.
Gotcha.
We're a bit more cultured than you fellows.
Than anywhere else. But, and yet I can say to you, now, I can use two of the most horrendous words in the English language, and not one repercussion will you feel. I can say to you, I hate broccoli, or I could kill for that. I can use hate and kill, two four-letter words that to me are the most reprehensible and horrible in the language, but you say a silly, inane, dopey word like F, you know, and you get the roof falls in. So what kind, it's so idiotic and hypocritical. They fine you, the FCC will fine you, if I say that word, they will fine you between $300,000 and $500,000. But I can say hate and kill. I could say I hate them for that, or I could kill them for that, and it's okay for that. And say that. Isn't that absurd?
It is. And by the way, if between 300 and 500,000 bill comes in here, I will hand deliver it to your house.
By all means, and I will give the delivery boy a cup of coffee, and I will use a word like F, and followed by off, and you never know.
Yeah. Tell me though. Let's just go back to the days. Before you got on radio, never mind thrown off, you were an actor, and
still am.
Well, I know, but when you started off as an actor, were you perceived, as somebody who wasn't the full shilling, so to speak?
Well, you know, people are always talking, Adrian, how people, when a parent said to me, my son is wants to go into the theater and be an actor, but I'm saying that he should study some, they'll just say something like accountancy, so he would have something to fall back on. Mm. And I say, you know, anatomically, we are constructed so that if we fall back on anything, we fall back on our backsides, mm. which generally speaking are padded well so that we can, that's what we fall back on. So I say, make sure your son gets fed well so he has something in his backside to fall back on. And stop talking about something to fall back on. And say, when somebody says, oh, I want to be a doctor, oh, he should study acting so he could have something to fall back on. So it gets bloody absurd. But in those days, there was a group called the Irish Players, Helen and Carol. This was 1956, yeah. I became an actor. And Dermot McNamara were the founders. And we did, they were lonely voices in the wilderness there. There was hardly any Irish theater at all then. So we did I saw three one-acts by John Millington Synge. And we did Playboy the Western World. And that ran, would you believe it, Edwin? That ran for a year. And we got very few Irish to come and see it. And I look at the people who signed in for more information on the theater company. And all you'd see were Jewish names, and they were marvelous supporters of Irish theatre. So the Irish do owe a lot to the Jewish theatre going population, because that was all we saw in those days, and it was great fun. And of course, then I got a bit of fame in those days. I was doing the Tonight Show with Jack Parr. I was on that there about 20 times. And then and then somebody came along with offering my own saloon, Malachy's, which was the first singles bar, I think, in New York, if not in America. We opened that in 1958, and that led to all kinds of things. So it was an interesting life. For a guy, you know, I left school when I was 13, Adrian. I failed everything. I was so bloody stupid in school, I couldn't get it, and so it was amazing that the things that happened. So I'd never, you know, I would never admit it in those days that I was totally uneducated, though I'm now, don't mind showing in front of your face now how badly I am, but I did read a lot, and that saved my arse.
You read a lot and continue to read a lot and write a lot about your early days, and I'm sure that many of our listeners would have been either entertained or totally shocked.
Yes.
by your play which still runs throughout the world, The Blackguards.
A couple of Blackguards with Frank.
Well, a couple of Blackguards. And in fact, you know, you revived a word that was disappearing from the dictionary.
Blackguards.
Yeah. But
isn't that interesting, Edwin, how words that came about because of Dublin dockers unloading English ships, coal from English ships in Dublin, and they'd go off and they'd have a few pints and get a bit rowdy. So the whole black, and they leave one of their number there because they're all covered with coal dust. So mm-hmm. he's a blackguard. He'd be the one that was left to look after the coal, so the Dublin Jackeens wouldn't steal it. And that was 1735 that word came into being. And anyway, I thought it was a great, great title for a play.
Give us a brief description, though, of your own play, The Blackguards.
Well, there were a lot of, in every town, as we know, in Ireland, every town has their own characters. And we had a fella named Gorky McMahon, and he was constantly up in front of Judge Hurley for one thing or another, but usually dealing with too many pints. So Gorky would be up there, and he was a great... And Gorky told what they would call lies. If I told the same stories, let's say, you're a terrible liar, you know. And I'm not. I'm a very good liar. I'm the best liar you ever talked to. And the chauffeur said, but anyway, Gorky would get up in front of your man and the judge, who also was very fond of the pints, but he never got arrested for disorderly conduct. And he couldn't see too well in the mornings, you know. And Gorky comes up in front of him and he says, and he peers out and he's not seeing too well. He says, so I'm one more. He says, have you been up before me previously? I don't know, says Gorky. What time do you get up, sir?
And he says, lovely.
Oh, it's you. It's you. He says, what brought you here this morning? Two policemen, sir. Drunk, I suppose. Oh, yes, sir, both of them. And that was the kind of thing that went on. And it and so anyway, Gorky would and of course the judge would recognize him then, of course. I said, all right. Just don't do that again, and he'd let him go.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we had our politician, Mr. Dan Burke, and he gave the most idiotic speeches of anybody. He would make Trump look like an intellectual. He'd say, ladies and gentlemen and fellow patriots, welcome to this extinguished assemblage. Let me reiterate what I'm about to say. I see before me people whose faces I have missed. I missed all the old faces I used to shake hands with. And that was his comment. And he was the man that he promised. He said, when I'm elected again, I will put shoes on all the poor, footless children of Limerick. So we deal with teachers, the church, the neighbors, death, and the whole bloody thing. And then the second part of the Blackguards then was coming to America and the adventures that we had after that. So we wrote it down. And then Bob Dylan says, I don't write songs, I write them down. So we wrote this down. And it's been going ever since, and it's published by Samuel French. And I think that any couple of actors that want to do a audition piece for themselves, that would be a very good piece for them to get a hold of.
Again, I distinctly remember back in the days when to try to come up with something equally lunatic as radio broadcast for a living, I used to run around the Jewish holidays. I would have a concert on a weekend up in the Jewish Catskills.
Yes.
And one of my downfalls was inviting you and the brother Frank,
yes,
to perform the Blackguards in the middle of what was a good, wholesome weekend of Irish entertainment. And somehow, again, misjudgment on my part, you guys went on after Sister Mary Beata and Mickey Carton and John O'Neill and, you know, all solid people.
Solid. Good Irish Catholic people.
And that was the beginning of what could have been a great career for me. I mean, I was just starting to, this thing was starting to take off. And at the risk of reiterating what I'm about to say, my career went a bit downhill after that, and I, as is a very west of Ireland, if not Irish tradition, it's great to have somebody to blame in hindsight, because if you go through your life,
your own sins, you see, you have to remember the three conditions, you know,
yeah,
them.
And it's great
and that
to
was
be.
And I remember one weekend, Michael Scanlon's mother was there, Mimi.
Mimi Scanlon, yes.
Mimi Scanlon. And she intervened with you because she said you have to have sense of humor. She said to put up with these fellows.
Yeah.
Name is Candle and Dave, because she was a grand woman. And she enjoyed herself, no end. She was a right rebel anyway. Mother of two, John and Michael Scanlon.
Michael Scanlon. Even in reminiscing, you had mentioned there the very small group of Irish actors. And you guys used to hang out in the Breffni.
Where
our good friend Joe Finn, who would go on to be a cop, was the bartender. And I think actually his vocation began there in the Breffni, because he was looking at the kind of clientele coming through the door, and he says, I have to do something else with the rest of my life, and became a top cop.
He did indeed.
The scene, though, with Malachy's and with the... What was the pub scene like in New York in the, you know, in the late 50s?
Well, there was a lot of Irish bars up and down on 3rd Avenue. You could...
Yeah.
Every window had a green shamrock and flashing neon lights with... Erin Gobra and all that sort of old rubbish, but there was a tradition of not allowing women. There was terrible prejudice against allowing women at this, because people thought it was the law that women couldn't sit at the bar, and so there was that kind of, it was a totally male province, and where men went to get away from the women, unlike Ireland, which in the, you know, where they had the snugs at the end of the bar where the women went and the men stood out in the men's bar,
which kind of were modeled after the confessional box, you know.
That was right, very good, Avery, because even the little window that they pulled aside, just say, I'll have 2 pints and 1 glass of lemonade, please, and God bless you. that's the way the order would be given. And the bartender, of course, being like the parish priest, there he was behind his altar and congregation there, and he'd have his, the cash register, of course, was where the sacrament of money was. And so on, all very holy and reverential. But then I opened up Malachy's then in 1958 it was, and around the corner there was the Barbizon Hotel for Women, where a lot of young things, lovely young girls were, including Grace Kelly. That's how I met her first, and she came around, and that was how, and the bar, and it just started like inadvertently like that. And people thought that I was breaking the law by allowing women to sit at the bar. I had to inform various law enforcement people that it was not breaking the law, that women could sit at the bar, and that was that.
Hmm.
So we, that's that. So it, then the lines started because of the night show, and they're down the street they were, down 3rd Avenue was two ways for a while. Then they had knocked down the old, the elevated, the elevated railroad there at the time, the Yale, as they called it.
Yale.
That was where they, where at Christmas time, that all the poor guys, you know, down in the Bowery used to sing the Christmas carol when they knocked it down. Noel, they called it. about that, but I thought I might bring that in.
Well,
the women knocked it down. But anyway, that was how that whole business started, and the whole singles bar thing started, and the guys would meet up, and, you know, I've met a number of people who met their wives there, and so I'm still married in so many ways, and not married in so many other ways, as things happen.
One of the notable aspects of your career as a bar owner, it is rumored anyway, that you were your own best customer, and that in fact you the bottom line reflected that your generosity, that one of the reasons you had lines of celebrities in your pub was that you gave drink away, which might have led to the tremendous success of the closing of Malachy's.
Well, Malachy's actually because of, as you put it so very kindly, my own generosity with the spirits behind the bar, and I'd have the people like O'Toole and Burton and Harris and
Richard,
God knows who else, all them, then Grace Kelly and people like that were in there by the dozens. They were all starting off their careers, but I was fond of it, and then of course there came a time when I said, well, it's time to put this down now. And so I did. And it's 32 years since I lifted a glass and with anything substantial, what I call substantial, in it. Yes. And so that's been a rather good, been a nice way of looking out in the world.
You know, And you've never shied away from speaking about that long before there was any sign of anybody really admitting it. Those who had a problem with the grog would kind of, they'd disappear from the scene and rumors would, be afloat they must have
something that, well, Adrian, it is very, in all seriousness, of course, you would think that after experiencing what this family, this McCourt family, went through due to my father's alcoholism, the desertion and the poverty and the misery and the indecency of being deprived of not being able to go to school, you didn't have enough to eat, and your shoes were torn and your arses out through your trousers and everything else. And you would think that would be, don't you think you'd have been a bit of a jerk here doing the same thing as your father? But you don't look upon it as a disease. That's the whole thing. And that's what it is. So it is a disease. And when you recognize, I don't want to be preaching to anybody, but I mean, if you have it, stop it. That's all. Do something about it is what I say. Your life will be happier, and I'm...
You have been a tremendous advocate on a serious note again. As a matter of fact, you conned me at one point into being with you for an event. And the event was that I found myself slithered into Alcoholics Anonymous, and in fact, it was with you. And I had to say to myself, if I have to hang out with the likes of Malachy McCourt again, maybe I'll do something about it myself. So you never got another opportunity to say, you want to join me now because I'm going to an event. I didn't find it as an event, mind you.
Well, I've pointed out how convenient, I think I did point out to you how convenient elbows are. And on the other hand, if we didn't have elbows, we wouldn't be drinking, you see. And so if the arm was totally straight without a joint in it, whenever you lifted anything, you'd throw it over your shoulder, you see.
Listen, part of what I know you enjoy in life is when you write books like Malachy McCourt's History of Ireland and The Claddagh Ring and Amongst Swimming and Singing My Hymn Song, many of those books have opened doors for you, which that Lord which you were talking about designed to get you out to book signings and readings, and that is the life that has taken you you know, right across the United States to Ireland, to places. What is the short version? Because Kevin O'Connor is waiting to bring us the news from.
Well, I've gotten, oddly enough, to Australia to do readings there, and I got to New Zealand. I have all around Europe, of course, Ireland and England and Germany and Belgium. And amazing the way, you know, because the knowledge of English is very helpful to be able to read and share with people. And I, you know, do cruise ships. I've been to Africa and Japan and with Diana and the Philippines and Indonesia. All over, so that's a thumbnail description, but around the bloody world. I mean, just because I was able to put a pen to paper and just let go. And, of course, it didn't. I mean, Frank started it all with Angela's Ashes, and then they came to me and said, you must have a book in you, too. So I said, okay, I'll have a go at it. So what is it, Adrian? It is telling a story. And we all we were gifted. The Irish are gifted that way and been able to tell the story, and that's all there is to it. And so we have the Irish Writers and Artists group here in New York, which I strongly suggest if you want to write, join us.
It's a great, great organization.
And then going out to Quag to see Joe Finn in next month and
for a reading.
At the Quag Library, that will be there at the end in February. So that so fun is going to be had with that.
Yeah.
We keep going.
You're actually now, and you didn't hear it from me, but you're, I understand you're cadging lodgings from Joe Finn out there. And I just want to let you know that I'm booked in for the same weekend, but I have the ground floor.
But I heard you were picking up my tab.
Yeah.
That was the rumor anyway. That's why I'm going.
And furthermore, you know, when you were there listing, you know, the great places you've been throughout the world, you neglected to say, and Flannelly's last Irish weekend in the Jewish Catskills. I mean...
Right. Oh, my God.
Considering that you put me out of business, I thought good manners would dictate that you should give that a mention too.
And also, and then on WBAI on Wednesday mornings from 10 until noon. It's not an opposition. No, it's not competition for you, Adrian. It's only midweek.
Yeah.
So
and,
with Cody Kilgannon and John McDonough. So we do that on,
and
on Wednesday mornings.
It's a great program, and those fellows do a great job too. Seriously, they come on WBAI after my own program
right
here on Saturdays with tremendous guests and all radicals, of course, like yourself.
Well, of course, bomb throwers, as you call us, from above. Yes.
Your books are on Amazon. .com.
That's
and,
it.
And your list of books, the new book, you're saying it's June. Your publishers are saying shortly. So
oh, really?
You might
they may go fast. Death need not be fatal.
Right. And there is now, you didn't, again, this is not my opinion, but I'm sure it's the opinion of some, that they would like to get that book out sooner rather than later.
And they'd like, some would like to see me in the coffin, too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, and there are some who wanted to see you in the coffin, you know, 50 years ago as well.
How I managed to stay out of the coffin.
Malachy, on serious note, we have been friends for a long time, and I am particularly, you know, happy that you have, despite your best efforts, never dragged me down with you, because, you know, on my programs back in those days, I did always include a disclaimer And
whenever I filled in for you and everything else, I'm trying to drag you down, but you always come back and redeemed yourself. You're very good, but then you have Anya as well, who just has kept you afloat for years as well. So
that's right. And
here we are, Adrian, and it's
Anya's.
So
friend.
It's it is life is still good, and it is simply a day at a time, nothing more to it than, as I said, remember, when you stop getting older, you're dead. So don't do that. It's I find that very low-class people die, you know. They've given up hope, you know. So I'm not going to do that. So don't you do that either.
No. We'll hang in. Malachi.
Thanks, Adrian.
We'll do this again soon. Okay.
The help of God and poor policemen, as they say.
Okay.
Right. Thanks, Adrian.
Thank you. Okay. Malachi McCourt, there, friends. The new book, Death Need Not Be Fatal. Again, not only a great actor and writer, and of stage and screen, and again, you know, going back to those days when about the first Irish person who could get on the Jack Parr show, which was that was the premier national television broadcast of the time. It's great to know that Malachi, in fact, indeed still has it. And all joking aside, when in any of Malachi's books, he has the talent to, despite being outrageous and hilarious in his writings, you know, he also manages to touch on, if not switch directly into very serious and poignant topics. His books are on Amazon, and again, the new book, Death Need Not Be Fatal.